Now, for Saraswati's promises. After that, we'll deal very briefly with the questions that arose in connection with Buddhism and culture, especially Buddhism and Western culture, and then conclude. First of all, Saraswati promises to bestow eloquence, and she says that she will bestow it for the sake of adorning the speech of the monk who preaches the law, who preaches the Dharma. The monk would, of course, be a follower of the Mahayana, a follower, that is to say, of the Bodhisattva ideal. So naturally, he wants to share the Dharma, share the Buddha's teaching with as many people as possible. He wants to share the golden light. So this means that he must be able to put across the golden light effectively. He therefore needs the power of communication. He needs eloquence. So Saraswati gives him eloquence. And this eloquence is not a matter of textbook rhetoric. It's not a matter of the tricks of the trade, of the professional after-dinner speaker. It is the genuine feelings of the heart, finding easy, natural expression in appropriate thoughts, appropriate words, and appropriate images. Second, Saraswati promises to bestow a good memory. This clearly is necessary for a preacher of the Dharma. There are references in the sutra to its being written down, but the memorizing of the sutras is still considered to be important. And this is still the tradition in some parts of the Buddhist world, even today. I remember one of my own Tibetan teachers telling me how many pages of text, how many pages of scripture he had to memorize a day as a small boy, as a novice monk. I think it was 7. The way of preaching the Dharma in ancient India was rather different from our own. It was more like a sort of public seminar. The custom was for the monk to recite a portion of the sutra, a few lines of the sutra or other text, and then give his own detailed paraphrase, explanation, and so on, maybe with illustrative stories. And in this manner, he'd make his way through the whole sutra from beginning to end. He might be reciting it and discoursing on it every day for several hours. And this might go on even for several months in the case of a rather long sutra. So clearly a good memory was needed. And this is what Saraswati promises to bestow. Good memory. Third, she promises to arrange the substance of his speech so that it is well spoken. The content of Mahayana sutras is frequently very difficult. But not only that, only too often the subject matter is not organized systematically. It's all mixed up, disconnected, even confused. So it's quite easy for the monk to get lost, as it were, in the sutra, lost in the jungle of the sutra. If he's not careful, he may not even see the overall shape, the overall structure of the sutra. May not, so impenetrable sometimes is the jungle, may not perceive its real message. And this is certainly the case with the Sutra of Golden Light. It may not be one of the most difficult of the Mahayana sutras, that is to say, as regards content, but it is certainly one of the least well arranged, at least in conventional literary terms. So here too, Saraswati helps out. She helps the monk to expound the sutra in orderly, systematic fashion. And for this, obviously, the monk must have an understanding of the sutra. So fourthly, she promises to bestow great illumination and knowledge. It's not enough for the monk to know the words of the sutra, not enough for him to be able to recite the sutra. recite the words of the sutra, he must be able to penetrate its meaning. He must be himself in touch with the golden light, even at one with the golden light. The golden light must shine through him. When he speaks, it must be the golden light speaking. Otherwise, the sutra of golden light is not truly preached. So the goddess promises to bestow great illumination and knowledge. And at this point it's clear that she does not represent any merely external agency, because no external agency can give illumination and knowledge. Saraswati really represents the monk's own cultured, cultivated consciousness, represents the refined but powerful emotions associated with that consciousness, emotions which have now become integrated with the spiritual life and which therefore contribute to the realization of the transcendental, the realization of the golden light. Fifthly, lastly, she promises to bestow a dharani. A dharani is a sort of magical spell. It's something that is to be borne in mind, something that is to be recited. The word comes from the same root as the word dharma, from the root dhri, meaning that which supports or upholds. The sutra of golden light, as we've already seen, is a late sutra. It was written down in the 4th to 8th century AD. And at that time, the Mahayana was being, as it were, superseded by the Vajrayana, or rather by the Mantrayana, which was the early phase of the Vajrayana. So the goddess's promise of a dharani therefore represents the eruption of the Vajrayana into the Mahayana, of the Mantrayana into the Paramitayana. It suggests that the preacher of the Dharma, the preacher of the Sutra of Golden Light, needs in his work the special qualities associated with the Vajrayana. He needs something, as it were, magical, something, as it were, transcendentally charismatic. He needs to be a kind of Padmasambhava figure. Otherwise, it's very difficult for him to succeed in his task. This is a very important topic, but there's no time to go into it now. We must now go straight on to the questions arising out of the relation between Buddhism and culture, especially Buddhism and Western culture. And I'm afraid that we shall have to be not only brief, but even oracularly brief. May be possible to have a more detailed discussion some other time.